last week, at the end of the week, we started the sugya of Eid Zomem. And we had a machlok shin abai v'rova. That's number one. And we had two views of Rava. What we call two lashonos of Rava. So as far as the machlok shin abai v'rova is concerned, Abai says that Eid Zomem l'mafreahu nifsal. He became posel at the time that he perjured himself with a false testimony, and that took place on Sunday when he gave the Eidus. Again, it took another 2 days until the process of Hazoma came to its fruition on Tuesday when the Mazimim came in and testified about the first pair of Eidim Imanu Ayisem. But Lamafreya, retroactively to Sunday, that's when the Eidim became posel Eidus. And therefore, any Eidus they gave subsequently, let's say if they testified on Monday, if they signed a shtar, was going to buy that shtar would be possible, because they were already possible, the Eidim were psulim on Sunday. Rava says, no, Ein Lecha Bo, this is the first lishon in Rava, Ein Lecha Bo L'mishas Chidusho, that the entire enterprise that we believe the second pair of Eidim against the first pair of Eidim is a Chidush. That's something that's not rational, and even in the halachic world we don't know exactly why. It's a gzeres hakosav, it's a chidush, it defies logic. Why believe the second pair of Eidim as opposed to the first? And therefore mikanu lahabu nifsal, this is activating the principle of the whenever you have a chidush, it's ein lecha bo mishas chidush avielach. In other words, at the moment that this aid became an aid zomeim, which is only after the second pair of aidim, the mazimim, came in to testify against them, at that moment they became aidim zomeim. So from that moment on, their halachic status changed, and anything that applies will only apply subsequent. And therefore, only from Tuesday and on, when the Mazimim came in to testify against him, only then did they become possible. We're not going to say the Mafreya, and that's based on a principle called Ein Lecha Bo El Mishas Chidusho Bielach. The second Lishon in Rava has a whole different approach. And that is, fundamentally, Rava is on board with Abaye, and he agrees that L'mafreya hu nifsal. But the Chachamim made a takana to allow us to rely on these Eidim so as not to cause a loss to the Lekuchos, meaning to anyone who wants to buy or sell a Sada, and he needs Eidim, and he doesn't know, he has no clue that these witnesses are disqualified, that they're Eidim Zomimim. So on Monday, he signs these two Eidim on a Shtar. So in such a case, the Shtar is kosher. And that's based on a Takonis Chachamim, which is called Gzera Mishum Pseida de Lekuchos. And it would seem that because of this Hefseid Lekuchos, because of people who, again, in their naivete, they have no clue that these Eidim are apostles, so therefore we have to make a takona to protect them, we're not going to apostle the Eidim Lemafreya. If, on the other hand, they would sign a shtar after the Hazoma took place, clearly that shtar would be apostle according to everybody. Now, Lekuchos means literally someone who bought something, meaning he put money on the line. He purchased a piece of real estate. Imagine he paid millions for that. And the validity of that kinyan is dependent upon the shtar. And the two Eidim signing the shtar are Eidim Zomimim, which he didn't know. And now we're going to apply the principle of Mishum Pseida Lekuchos, and we're going to be Machshir, we're going to qualify that testimony. But what happens if he didn't put any money down on the line? That's called a Shtar Matana. Shtar Matana means somebody wants to give you a gift, you're not paying for it, it's gratis. And you got two Eidim to sign in the Shtar to testify that so-and-so Reuven gave a gift to Shimon. In such a case, there's no pseida. Nobody's losing anything here. Why? Because it's just that you won't be able to verify that matana, but you didn't put any money on the line, and therefore the concept called pseida lekucho should not apply in that case. So this is actually a discussion of Tosfos, not here in Masechta Sanhedrin, but in the original sugya of Eidim Zomim, which is in Baba Kama on page Ayin Beis. And there Tosfos writes that in the case of Shtari Matana, then lo pasulus ha'eid l'mafreya. We're going to apply the same principle of Rava in this Lishna Basa of Rava, that the Eidim are Ksherim, and therefore the document is absolutely valid. And why is that so? Kidei shelo yafsid makabel ha'matana. We don't want the one who received the matana to lose out. Again, that's also called a hefsed. Hefsed doesn't only mean when you put money on the table to purchase something, but hefsed would mean even in a case where you received a gift, and it's a very significant gift, you want to be able to validate that gift and verify it, then you need that shtar. So once again, we're going to make this takana, and we're going to say that the Eidim HaKsherim, we're not going to apply the principle of Eid Zomim L'mafreya Hu Nifsal, because who knows if he'll ever get the Nosein to agree again to give him that matana. This was a wonderful opportunity. Now what happens if these two Eidim that plagiarized themselves on Sunday, and we only found them to be Zomim on Tuesday, on Monday they signed what's called a Shtar Kiddushin or a Get. So now we're no longer dealing with Hefsed Lekuchos. We're not talking about a monetary loss. You may remember, for those of you with me for the Iyun Shir, that we discussed something very similar in Psuliedis de Rabbana with regard to Issa Veheta. That was the Nebuki Yosef in Issa Veheta. So what do we do here in Eid Zome Mikando Lahabu Nifsal with regard to the Shtaros for Gittin or Kiddushin that they signed subsequent to the plate, to the moment that they perjured themselves, but before they became Mezomimim? And here we have discussion in, not the Tosas, but in Tosa Rosh and the Ran. And they come to the conclusion that in this case we have to passel all the Gittin and all the Kiddushin that they testified upon on Monday, because already on Sunday they were Psulim, and Rava fundamentally agrees that Eid Zomim L'mafreya Hu Nifsal. Rava is only trying to protect the Lekuchos, but here there's no need to protect any Lekuchos. We're dealing with Gittin and Kiddushin. And even though we come to the conclusion that now, straight across the board, these Eidim are ksherim for dini mominos, right? Even in the case of Matana, where there's no psay the lekuchos, but in contrast, when it's only isa veheter, then we're going to passel them lemafreya from the time that they gave their testimony, and that's a case of get or a shtar kiddushin. So it's really interesting because the Gemara is about to ask, what's the nafkamina between A and B, between the two Lashonos of Rava? The first Lashon of Rava says, Eid Zomim Mikan Olavu Nifsal, because Eid Zomim is a Chiddush, and Eid Lecha Bola Mishas Chiddush Ve'elach. The second interpretation of Rava, second version of Rava, is that Rava said, Eid Zomim L'mafreu Nifsal like Abai, but only Mishum Psei Delekuch, so we're going to verify. Now, what would be in a case of Kiddushin and Gerushin? This would be an afkimina, because if you hold like Rava in the first Lishna, that means there's no way, no how, that Rava would passel the Eidim L'mafreya. Why? Because Ein Lecha Bo El Mishas Chiddush Ve'elach. But if you hold like Rava in the second Lishna, then here we would say L'mafreya Nifsal, because there's no Pesed L'kuchas, getting the Kiddushin is not Pesed L'kuchas. So why did the Gemara give this as an afkimina? The Gemara is going to look high and low and turn over, you know, do somersaults in the air to find nafkaminas between the two Lashonos. What about Gittin and Kiddushin? I mean, that's a very, very far-reaching implication here. And therefore, some Rishonim want to come to the conclusion that we're not going to passel them L'mafre at all. And even as far as Gittin and Kiddushin are concerned, we're not going to passel them L'mafre. But again, if you go with the Gemara, and the Gemara says Pesed L'kuchos, it doesn't seem that that should apply. In any event, let's ask the following question. Why are we choshish for hefsed lekuchos? Why are we choshish for the hefsed of the mocher, the mocherim, right? Every sale has two parties, two partners. There's the seller and there's the buyer. All the emphasis here is on the loss to the buyer, right? The lekuchos are the buyers. What about the loss to the mocherim? There's no mention over here. Now, let's say the mocher denies that he ever agreed to the sale. And the lokeach says, what do you mean you didn't agree to the sale? I have proof, I have a document that you agreed to the sale. So the mocher says, well, who signed on the document? Ha, Eidim Zomimim? These are Eidim who lied, and they have a good record for lying, they're very consistent, the whole thing was fabricated. So why are you going to be machshir the shtaros on behalf, representing, we are the defense, like defense panel for the lekuchos? What about the mocherim who were denying that they ever sold it? And now you're going to be mashed to Edom Shakronim because of the Pseudo Lekuchos. So the Ran asks this kasha, a really fundamental question. And he says that who's holding on to the shtar? In every case of a sale, it's the lokeach, the buyer, who holds on to the shtar. Why? Because the buyer wants to prove that he bought this karka. Everybody knows this karka belonged to Reuven, the seller. Nobody knows that it was sold and that Shimon purchased the shtar. So he gets hold on to the shtar. Once he gets hold on to the shtar, he becomes what's called muchzok. And muchzok means that we assume that he's the rightful owner of this karka. Why? Because he's holding on to a shtar.
What's
now, muchzok. Oh, I should write that down. Yeah, let me write that down because that's like, you know, a base. Oh, Steve, can you help me here? Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do when you're in America. I don't know, but
now a loss of Chicago's gain, I guess. So we have something called muchzok.
Yeah, back to it.
You know the phrase in English, possession is 9/10 of the law? So if you come to sue me in a court of law and you want me to pay you something out of pocket, the burden of proof is on you because I'm a muchzok. And the halacha preempted this very basic rule in law by a good couple of centuries, or if not millennia. And the halacha is all based on this concept of muchzok. Now, normally a muchzok is someone who's holding on to the real estate. He's living there, it's registered in his name, etc., etc. But there's another concept of muchzok, and that's based on a shtar. If I'm holding on to a shtar that testifies to the fact that I purchased the land, the shtar makes me into a muchzok. Now the burden of proof is on you, the seller, to prove that this shtar is an invalid shtar.
So in terms of who's on the property versus who has the shtar, how do you apply a motzi mechaver
alavarai? Right. So he's saying the following, that the mocher is claiming that he didn't sell the shtar. Now, when does the mocher actually make that he didn't sell this karka? When does the mocher actually register his complaint? It seems that, again, according to the Ran at least, the Baal HaShtar and the so-called lokeach, who's claiming that he purchased the karka, he's been muchzok now for a while. Again, I can't tell you how long of a time period it is. Where was the mocher until now? All of a sudden, at the time of Hazom, again, I gave you an example where the Hazom took place 2 days later, but let's say the Hazom, just to dramatize, took place 6 months later. Remember, we had a case of Nisan and Adar. Where were you for the last 6 months, Mr. Mocher? Why didn't you register your complaint? Why didn't you invalidate the sale and throw this guy out of your karka and tell him that the whole story is fabrication? All of a sudden, you waited till Azama. So what happens is, in that interim period of time, where the lokeach now takes over the karka and he has a shtar, and the Mocher right now is saying nothing. Again, usually the mocher has to be silent for a full 3 years in order to create a chazok. That's a Mishnah, the third parak of Abbasra. But the raya, the proof from the mocher's silence, already begins the moment that somebody goes into the karka, claims it's his, he bought it, and he has a shtar. Comes along the mocher, and he wakes up one fine day, and he decides, well, this guy is a squatter. He stole my property. I never sold it to him.
But it could happen here, like people are in Kutz La'aretz for 6 months at a time.
Right, it's true. I don't know, it could be that, according to the Ran, every case has to be dealt with its variables and so forth. But if you can follow this scenario, what the Ran is saying is that in most cases, till the Azama process completes itself, it takes a while. And if in the interim, this lokeach, claiming that he's the rightful owner because he purchased the land, is sitting on the land, working the land, holding on to a document, all the indications seem to point to the direction that he legally purchased the land. And he has a shtar to prove it. Now, all of a sudden, on one fine day, the mocher wakes up. What was that one fine day? After Azama comes in. And all of a sudden, he says to the, you know, in front of the Bezdin, he says that this lokeach is a thief. And I never sold him the land. What do you mean? You never sold him, he's got a shtar. Oh, no, no, no. The Edom on the shtar are shakron. And he quotes the halacha, he's a big lambi, so he quotes the halacha of Abaye, Eidzon, Mafreya, who lives up. And then he quotes Rava according to the second Mishnah of Rava. Rava agrees Eidzon, Mafreya, who lives up. Oh, but wait a minute, in the second Mishnah of Rava, we have to worry about the Pseida Lukukos. So the Mokher says, why are you worried about his Pseida? What about my Pseida? I never sold him this land. And the answer is, where were you until now? And in that interim period of time, until the mocher establishes his complaint, the lokeach now settles into the karka, has the shtar in his hand. We have no reason to suspect that the shtar is an invalid shtar, and he becomes the lokeach becomes the muhsar. So I'm just telling you that the kasha of the Ran is a bomb kasha. Why is the Gemara worried about the Lekuchos? Why is Rav in the Lishna Basra making a takona to protect the Lekuchos? Why is the Mocher any worse of a, you know, why is he, as we say, chopped liver, and we don't care about the Mocher, all we care about is the Lokea? My Beinai. This is where we were holding on Thursday. So let's make sure everybody has the place. We are on Daf of Zion Amud Aleph. And I would say we're about 12 lines down from the top, I'm not sure. But the first word in the line is Mikan, and then it says at the end of the line, Mai. Yeah, that's good? Mai Beinai. We have two Lashonos in Rav. What's the difference? In both cases, in any event, Rav is saying Mikan Olahabu Nifsa. So the Gemara says, Ika Beinayu. Here's the first Nafgamina. Das hidu beitrei bechad. It wasn't imanu ha'yisim in the plural, but imanu ha'yisa in the singular. Two witnesses testify against Reuven. Reuven's one of the two witnesses, the original witnesses, that he was with them in Chicago. He couldn't have been in New York. Another two witnesses come in, and they testify against Shimon that he couldn't have been in New York because he was with us in Chicago. So now we have two edim that are ganging up, well, two pairs of Edom, I should say, that are ganging up each pair of Edom against one of the two Edom, picking them off. And now we understand why Rava would say in this case that certainly there's no chidush here, that it's logical that we should believe the Edom Amazimim. So let's go with the first lishon of Rava. The first lishon of Rava was that Edom Zomim is what? Is a chidush. V'ein lecha bolim yishas chidush aveilach. Here's a case where Edom Zomim is not a chidush. Why? Because it's two against one and two against one. Do we have a scenario here? So the original Edom in the first kat were Reuven and Shimon. Now we have one kat that's coming in to say that Reuven couldn't have been there, he was with us. Another kat comes in and says that Shimon couldn't have been there because he was with us. And in each case, each aid is subject to a testimony of two Edom against one. And in the case of two Edom against one, we certainly believe the two Edom, not because of majority, but simply because one aid is worthless against two Edom. Now here we have a Gevaldig Akasha to ask on this Gemara. Oh, so one second. But if you're going to go with the second Lishna of Rava, that's called what? Help me out here, Mishum. Pseida de Lekuchos. Then, even in this case, we have Pseida de Lekuchos. Why? Because Lekuchos, when they purchased this land and they got Reuven and Shimon to sign on this shtar, they had no clue that Reuven and Shimon were Edom Zomimim. And therefore, their naivete, they relied on a cheskes kashus that these two Edom are kosher, and they signed them. So what, we're going to cause the lokeach to lose his money? Why? Because now we have Edom testimony to establish that he's an exome, but there was no way they could have known about it. This case, by the way, is very similar to what we discussed in Psule Edus Drabanan, without Achraza, that if there was no Achraza, you recall, how would anybody know that these Edom are gamblers? It wasn't public knowledge. Or that this pair of Edom they took Alvar Berivis. We don't know that. So they made a takana, Mishum Pseidel Lekuchos, that the Edom, we're not going to pass the Edom until Achraza. Here also, according to Rava, in the second Lishon of Rava, we're not going to pass the Edom until Azamah. And even though this Hazam is logical, and therefore the first Lishon of Rava that says Chidushu, that this is antithetical to human logic, that doesn't apply, because here it's Trei Keneged Chad. It's two against one and two against one. So that's the first Nafkamina. Now here we have a Gevaldik Akasha. The Gemara is assuming that this is two against one and two against one. That's not really true. It's always going to be two against two. And I'll tell you why. Because when Reuven and Shimon come into Beis Din, they're not only testifying in the I, what's that called in the what's that called grammatical?
Singular.
What? Singular. Singular. No, but I meant to say singular could mean you is also singular, but right? But I mean, when I speak about I, first person. Oh, that's the phrase I was looking for. They're not only testifying in first person. I was there to see the crime. What do you say? Yeah, it's a we. It's a team effort.
First person plural.
Correct. First person plural. It's we. It's the two of us were there. And that's the koach of Eidus. Every kind of Eidus is built on the fact that each one reciprocally is telling a story about the other one. We were there as a team. We both saw the Eidus together. So what that means is that if anyone says Imanu Hayisa to any picking off one of the two Eidim, then in effect he's going to be contradicted by the two Eidim who both testify that they were there to see the crime as a group, as a duet. So here I have here, in the name of the Rishonim, an unbelievable Chiddush. And he says that the case that the Gemara is talking about is where the two Edom who originally, and now become Zomimim, who originally testified, Reuven and Shimon, they didn't see each other. They only met up in Beis Din. But they didn't know about each other. In other words, it's not that Reuven testifies that in the first person that I saw it, and also the second person he saw it, but rather Reuven says, I saw it, I don't know about anybody else. You know, there may have been other people in the public there, you know, it took place outside in the streets, but I don't know of anybody else. So Memela, this kind of Eidus is a tziruf, is a combination of two Eidim, but each Eid is independent. Reuven saw it and Shimon saw it. We're going to combine the two, and they're going to link up as a cat in Haggadah in Sipra Maisa telling the story. But it's not that each one is testifying on the other that he was there to see the crime. It's Memela, the Gemara is right, when it's Asinu Trei Bechad, it's two against one and two against one. So therefore, if Rava's logic is because of Chidush, then this is not a Chidush. We certainly want to believe two against one. And that's because, not just majority rules, but because two forms a cat and one is nothing. It's not a cat. And if we go to the second Lishon of Rava, by contrast, then we have the issue of Pseudo Lekukas, and that's just as pressing and as urgent as the case of classic case of Edom Zomim. Inami. Now the Gemara suggests a second Nafkamina. And that is Paslininu Begazlinusa. This is a case that I mentioned last week. What happens if the two Edom testify about the original Edom against Reuven and Shimon that they were Gazlanim, that months ago or years ago, whatever it was, we saw them steal? And they're possibly Edom because of the din of Gzeil of a Gazlan. Now we should believe the second pair of Edom because the first pair of Edom are now on trial. They're on trial for Gzela that took place prior to the testimony and let's call it the Ritzich, the murder case that they were discussing. So let's say the murder case took place a month ago, and according to the testimony of the new pair of Edom that come to Beis Din, the Gzela that these two Edom stole took place 2 months ago. So already 2 months ago they were apostle. And now we have to certainly assume that these Edom are psulim lemafreya because of Gazlanusa. Now let me go even a step further. When the Gemara says inami de paslinim begazlanusa, forget about Edom Zomim. Let's leave out Edom Zomim. Let's talk about the following case. Two witnesses come in to testify, or let's say they even have any. You know, right now we don't even know about the testimony. What I'm trying to suggest here is that Paslininu Begazlinusa, when they, the two pair of Edom who come in now and say that the first pair of Edom were apostle, and now we want to know And the reason why they were apostles is because they were thieves. They were guilty of the crime of Gzela. We want to know what happens to the status of these Edom that are now being accused as Gazlonim during this entire period of time until Bezdin actually established, based on this second pair of Edom, that they were Gazlonim. What was their status as far as Edus in between? And the answer is that that's going to depend upon the two Lashonos of Rava. Because let's go with the second Lashon of Rava, that we're worried about Pseidah Lekuchos. Well, in this case, we have to worry about Pseidah Lekuchos, because the Lokeach, when he had these two Edom signed on the document, he had no clue that they were Psulim, because there was no Edus against them, you know, accusing them as of Gazlonus. But if you hold that Eid Zom Chidashu, here, and that's the first Lishon in Rava, we would say Lamafreya Hu Nifsal, because in this case, it's not a Chidush. Because now the Edom themselves are on trial for a Maisa Gzela that took place months ago, and they can't defend themselves as two Edom, so we don't have Trey Utrey over here, we have Trey against zero. The Gazlonim, the Edom HaMe'idim SheGazlu, SheGazlonim Haim, and the Psulim Liedus, those Edom stand alone in Bezdin. There's no one to contradict them. And therefore, this is not called a chidush, and the Edom who were accused to be Gazlonim, Apostle Mafreya, so any shtaros that they signed on in between will be automatically disqualified. But if I hold like Rav in the Lishna Basra, we're not going to allow disqualify these shtaros, because Pseidah Lekuchos, nobody knew that they were Gazlonim. So those are the two nafkaminas, and if you were students in my class, I would ask you on an exam, what are these two nafkaminas? I just wanted to warn you that if you ever sign up for my course, you should know that this is going to be one of the questions on the exam. I always appreciated professors in college who would tell us which questions they would ask on the exam, because that meant that the exam was really lishma. It meant that these are the materials, the highlights, these are the things I want you to walk out with, I want you to know. I remember when I was in graduate school, I took a course in constitutional law. And one of the issues in constitutional law is called federalism. You know, it has to do with federal state rights. And I remember that when the professor presented the lectures, it was a series on federalism, maybe lasted 3 weeks, I saw how excited he was about this. So 6 months later, when it was time for the final, I said, this guy is going to ask about federalism. And I locked myself up in a library, and I researched federalism. And I went way beyond what he had taught us in the course. And sure enough, I lucked out. He asked the question of federalism. I got back an exam. This never happened to me in all my college career or my graduate school career. And he writes on it that you are Machadish Chidushim that I never thought of. And he gave me an A+ in the course. I never got an A+, not in college nor in graduate school. An A+ in graduate school is like, it's a Chidush. I have to tell you this, that this professor has been quoted on the Supreme Court numerous times in the United States. He's not just the professor of law, and he was the chairman of the political science department in the graduate school I went to, but he's one of the most famous thinkers in law in the area which is called search and seizure. He became very famous at the time of the Nixon Watergate scandals because he was the final authority amongst the thinkers in political law about that particular amendment to the Constitution, which is called search and seizure. In any event, Amar Rav Yirmiyahu Midifti, Ovid Rav Papi, Uvda Kavase de Rava. So now the question is, how do we paskin? Now we have machlokas here between Abai Verova, and we always, or shall I say almost always, paskin like Rava against Abai. And here's another example. According to Rapapi, we should accept the halacha of Rava and Mikan Ulahabu Nifsal. But Mar Baravashi Omar Hilchasa Kavase Dabai. That in this case of Eid Zomen, we paskin like Abai. And the Gemara concludes after this, you know, presentation of Rav Papi and Rav Ashi, the bottom line, the final word is Hilchas HaKavase De Abaye B'Yal Kigam. So Yal Kigam are six, the Beis is just a conjugation, but Yal Kigam are six letters, and each letter is the beginning of a word which indicates a machlokas between Abai v'Rava. So out of the six letters, one we know for sure, which is that? The ayin, because the ayin is for Edim Zomimim. What are the other five cases in which we paskin like Abai against Rava? So the first one is Yud. Yud is a sugya in Eilu Mitzia, second parak of Mitzia, which is a famous sugya called Yeish Shalom Midas. And we paskin like Abaye that Yeish Shalom Midas the ayin is a zomem, and we paskin like Abaye that Lemafreu Nifsal. And then we get to the Lamed. The Lamed is the Sugya Masechta Erevin, and that's called Lechi HaOmed Me'elov. And Abai holds it has a din of a Lechi. And then we get to Kagam. The Kuf is referring to Kedushin Shlo Nimsuru Labia. And we pass like Abai that the Kedushin is invalid. So he married two sisters simultaneously and he cannot have relationship with either one of them because either one of them will be Achos Ishto. So Abaye invalidates the Kedushin and we pass like Abaye. And then we get to Gimel. Gimel is called Gilui Das Beget, which means that a person writes a get, he sends the get with a shliach to his wife who's on the other side of the world, and as the shliach is in route, the mashaleach, the Baal decides, no, this is not good. I want to invalidate the get. So he expresses his dissatisfaction with the get, and he wants to be mevatel the shliach and say the shliach is no longer his agent. And all this happens before the get was delivered to the hands of the Isha. Once she gets the get, I mean, he's out of the picture. And Abai paskins that gili dat to beget, eno gili das. We're going to validate the get despite what he said and what he declared. And finally, the last mem, the last letter is mem, mumar ochel nevelos lahachis. That's going to be the next sugi that we're about to learn. So it's fascinating that two out of the six cases of a machlokes between Abai and Rava, which we paskin like Abai against Rava, are both here on this page. That makes this page very chosh. My father's a Zichron Livracha, when he went for his smicha exam, many, many years ago, by now it's probably close to a century ago, so there were three examiners. It was what we call an oral exam. And this is in the early 1930s. I don't know if you know the history of America, but that was a very, that was called the Great Depression. And it was very crucial for my father, who actually was engaged to get married, and he was younger than 22. It was crucial for him to get that smicha, that organization, because that was the only way he could support himself and his wife. And imagine what happened is if you failed the exam, they sent you back to the base medrash for another 6 months. Don't bother us for another half a year. And he had already gotten an offer up in Bangor, Maine. Now the rule was that the bulk of the exam was in certain areas of halacha. That's Yoredei Chelek Aleph, Yoredei Chelek Gimel. That means the laws of Basa B'Cholav and Shechita, the laws of Nida, the laws of Mikvos. That was the heavy, but they could ask you anywhere from anything. Anyway, just to see who you are. And they asked him what was Yal Kagam. And he knew Yal Kagam. And the rest is history, because after that, you know, he did well in Nida. There's a whole story about his mikvahs, I think I may have once told you that example. But in any event, the Yal Kagam was one of the questions that they asked him. Alright, now we start the sugya of Abai v'Rava about how to define a Rasha who's posuliatus. The Torah says in Parashas Mishpatim, Al Toshes Yodcha im Rasha, Lios Eid Hamas. So there's a Rasha in this Pasuk and there's a Seifa, and the issue here is going to be how to relate the two. The Rasha in the Pasuk says, im Rasha. In other words, don't join up with a Rasha because he cannot testify in a court of law. And his testimony is invalid. And the word Rasha would indicate anyone who violates any of the Tariq mitzvahs. But then it says Leos Eid Hamas, and that implies that he's a money hungry person, and the reason why we don't trust him and he has no credibility is because he can be bought off with money. So let's go through the case in which both Abai Rava agree that he's Pasul Yedus and he comes under Eid Hamas, and the case which is a Rasha without it being an Eid Hamas, without being a Rasha the Chamson, and that's going to be a Machlokas between Abai Rava. Wait a second, Jerry, I thought you were staying till the end of January. No, I'm just kidding. I'm joking. Just trying to get a joke for a smile from me. Okay. So here's the case where they both agree. This Abai Rava. Mumar ochel nevelus l'teyama. Now watch what goes on over here. If you offer him two pieces of meat, one kosher and one treif, at the same exact price, he'll eat the kosher meat. He's not a lahachisnik, you know, one of these guys who wants to shove it in your face and say, well, I don't believe in your Torah, and I'm going to eat the treif of meat. No, he'll eat the kosher meat. But on occasion, he eats non-kosher meat. The reason for that is because he lives in a place where they have to import, you know, kosher meat from who knows where, you know, across the country, and they're going to charge him double. I'm just dramatizing it. So he's not going to pay double. You know, he loves meat. He's a meat eater. He's cadaverous. Yeah, he's a meat eater. Loves meat. He's not one of these guys today. You know, you have the what do they call them? Vegans. Vegans. You know, what's the one that we always knew about? What were those? The vegetarians. Now they're vegans. I don't know what else they have. You know, people don't eat meat. This guy's a meat eater. But the only thing is, he has a limited amount of funds. And if he really wants to eat meat, imagine if he can get two pieces of meat for the price of one. If he eats nevela, he eats non-kosher meat, he'll get two pieces of meat for the price of one. He doesn't have a, you know, an open pocketbook. He's not a billionaire.
That's called the teyavon.
And that's called the teyavon. The teyavon means that because he has this desire to eat meat, I'll give you an example. This is a very extreme example, but drug addiction. Now, a drug addict, unless he's independently wealthy, needs the funds to buy drugs. He's addicted, so he has, we'll call it a taiva, desire to take the drugs. But he has to, you know, keep his pocket, he has to make sure that he cuts expenses. So if it means that for the sake of keeping up his addiction, he's going to cut his expenses, then that's called l'teyavon. This guy is, so to speak, addicted to meat. He's got to eat meat. For whatever reason, he loves meat, his family loves meat. But, you know, in order to supply his family with meat, he's got to slash the price. You know, he can't pay all this money. So what he does is he buys the nevela, only because he's saving money. So the Gemara says that both Abai and Rav agree that he's a Rasha, that's Pasul Yedus, because what motivates him to violate the Torah? Again, L'teyavon is the background, but I wouldn't put all the emphasis on L'teyavon. The word L'teyavon in this Gemara is we call it in Hebrew a keresh kvitza. It's like a jumping board. L'teyavon here means that he has such a teyavon that in order to save money, so that he can enjoy his teyavon, he'll violate the Torah.
So he can be bought off.
Correct. And he will be bought off as a bribe. He'll receive a bribe, we're afraid, in Bezda, because if you give him a bribe, he'll take that money, he'll buy more meat. Because he's got this taiva, as you say, he's addicted to meat. But again, it doesn't have to be an extreme case where he's addicted to meat. I'm just talking about a person who's willing, for the sake of money, to violate the Torah. Once he's proven us that he's willing to violate the Torah for the sake of money, why shouldn't we assume that he'll violate the Torah that says, Losan b'reyach et shaker, you can't falsify your testimony for the sake of money. Somebody's going to buy him off. They'll make him an offer he can't refuse. And that's already called a Rasha de Chamas. He's not a Rasha because of piety, Because again, if it was just a matter of piety and religious observance, give him a piece of kosher meat, he'll eat it, he'll be absolutely satisfied, and he'll jump for joy if you give him a kosher steak. That's not a problem for him. A kosher steak is no worse than a non-kosher steak. The only problem is, it's worse because he doesn't want to pay the money. He needs that money to buy more meat and more meat. So he's what you call an aid chumas. He's a rush of the chumas. And that's the case where both Abai and Rava agree that he's posuliatus. Where is the machlokes between Abai and Rava? And that is mumar ochel nevelos lahachis. So you give him a choice of kosher meat and non-kosher meat, the same exact price. Which meat is he going to eat? He's going to eat the treif meat. Why? Because he's a lahachis thing. He wants to wave it in your face. He's got a flag here. He's got an agenda. I don't believe. Now you and I would say, well, if he doesn't believe in the Torah, he's a lahachis thing, then Abai is certainly right. Possible. Intuitively, we can identify with Abai, who wants to trust a guy who's totally irreligious. But Rava Mar Kosher. Rava says he's kosher.
He's a principled violator.
He's a principled violator, but it doesn't mean that he's gonna come into Beis Din, you know, uninvited and fabricate a whole story. You know, you could say that maybe he would do that in order to show the rabbis that wants to show them up, so to speak. You know, later on they're going to find out that these rabbis accepted him as a witness and the whole story was fabricated. That's a lahachis. But we're not worried about that. So if you ask me to try b'chol zot, again, I identify much easier, much more comfortable with Abai, but if you ask me to somehow explain what I think Rava might have in mind here, and we'll see if the sugya bears me out, is that just because a person is lahachisnik, he's not going to mess up somebody else by testifying that this guy Reuven owes Shimon $1 million. That he doesn't have any vested interest to do so. Perhaps he has what you would call an intuitive ethical sense. Intuitively, he's an ethical person. He's not out there to destroy people. Again, he's a lahachisnik. You know, the Torah doesn't sit well with him. That's not his thing. But
his eduk would still be trustworthy. So.
But he's still trustworthy. And this could have tremendous repercussions. The only problem is we pass him like Abai. This is one of Yal Kagam. Right? This is the mem of Yal Kagam of Mumar Ochel Nevelos Lahachis. Which means that okay, so let's look at the Gemara is going to actually analyze this. Abai Omer Apostle, Davile Rasha. You know, you can't say that anyone is worse of a Rasha than this Lahachisnik. He violates the Torah, tramples it deliberately. It's Rachmana Omer, and the Torah says, Al Toshes Rasha Eid. Period. You know, he puts the period here. Again, the rest of the pasuk says Leo Seid Chamas, but Abai reads the first part of the pasuk as a separate, independent description of the category of who, of that person who is disqualified because he's a Rasha. And he's a Rasha. There's no greater Rasha. He's got a capital R on his sweatshirt. Give him, there are two restaurants on the block, and they're both charging the same amount. One is kosher, one is treif. He's going to eat in the treif restaurant.
Even if the kosher was cheaper,
yeah. You know, I was in a number of different countries. One country I was in, I'm not recommending it, but my wife and I went to Thailand because my niece, my sister's daughter, and her husband are working. I'm not going to say exactly what they do, but they're working for the Israeli government. That's very sensitive. But anyway, so they're located in Bangkok in Thailand. So we spent a week with them in Thailand. And you know, you can't eat kosher in Thailand without Chabad. Forget it. And it was amazing to us because food is very cheap in Thailand. And the prices in Chabad, and it was excellent food, were the same as what the Goyim were paying. We never saw that anywhere in the world. And it's probably because Chabad wanted to give incentive to Jewish people going to Thailand or living in Thailand, and there are many Jews living in Thailand, to eat kosher food. And there, it must be subsidized. I don't know. I never checked this out, so I can't verify this. But so again, this guy has a choice. He can either eat the wonderful food in Chabad or go to the Treifa restaurant and get the same food in both and at the same price. He's going to buy the tray for food. He's a lahachas. So Abai says he's a Rasha, and the Torah says I'll tosh es yodcha in Rasha. And Rava says no. Let's read the end of the pasuk. Rav Amar Kasha, Rasha de chamas beinan. What motivates him is to save money. So if he has a taiva and he can't fulfill his taiva, you know, unless he has enough money to do so, he's like addicted to his yetzahara and therefore he needs money. Well, if this guy needs money to fulfill his taivas, he's like a drug addict. He'll do anything to get money. And Rava says such a person will do anything to get money, and that's what motivates him. He is chashid. We suspect him that he will testify either sheker for tmurat mamon if you pay him enough money. But a person who eats nevela simply lachas, he still has this natural inclination to be an honest person. There's no motivation. He doesn't gain anything by testifying falsely and fabricating a whole story, and therefore he's not possible. Fascinating, no? You know, I was thinking to myself, okay, this is not a good example, but I'll tell you why it's not a good example. But let's say Ben Gurion, right? He was the founder of the State of Israel. And he wasn't particularly religious. I mean, that's an understatement. He did have a certain respect for Yiddishkeit. And I know this because when he met with my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, in New York, so he said he wants to make the state in such a way that it'll be most appealing to all Jews and even religious Jews. But if he would testify in a court of law, Jewish court of law, what would be his status? I mean, this guy has so many merits going for him, but he's a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. So that's not really a good example, because Ben Gurion might come under what you call a Tinok Shenishva, if you're familiar with that phrase. He was never taught any better. But even if he was taught better, he decides this is not for him, and he chucks it all, I would still think that he has what I call a moral compass, if you're familiar with that phrase. And we could trust him, and that would be perhaps Rava's insistence that only a Rasha Rasha the Chamos is possibly. What do you say?
I'm saying then that wouldn't be lachis. If he has a moral compass, that's not lachis.
No. What do I mean lachis? Lachis means he has a disdain, if you pardon the word. I could use a stronger word than that for religion, and I'm talking about Jewish religion.
That's what I'm saying. So Ben Gurion wouldn't fall into lachis.
Again, only because it's a Tinok Shenishpa, but let's say that there were, again, I shouldn't say this out loud, but Shomer Atzair, you know, these guys were Mamish Lahachisniks, you know, they wanted to be Oker Hadas. But they put their lives on the line for other Jews. So I'm wondering if that would fit into Rava's category. These are Mamish Lahachisniks.
Well, there should be a third category, I mean, another category for the person who is devoting his life to saving Am Yisrael and to bringing in, you know, all these.
Correct. Correct. Maybe Rava would need a board of judges that would determine in each case whether this witness has a strong moral compass. Maybe we would want to adduce evidence that he's. I know, for example, a judge here in Israel, major judge, very famous, and he's a lahachisnik, but he's a great judge. I mean. So there is such a thing, but maybe, yeah, I don't know if in secular law there is such a thing as a psul rasha. I don't know if in Western civilization you have something called a rasha, you know. But it could be that even in Western civilization, if you had a drug addict, maybe, you know, the jury at least, I don't know about the law, you know, you'd have to, I don't know if there's a difference between the law itself. The law might say, well, all right, he's this, he's that, and the other thing, but we need his testimony. But it could be the jury, for example, would require some sort of character, reference or so, because if he's a drug addict, you know, maybe somebody's paying him to, you know, he needs money desperately.
Or in America, you take somebody who's a criminal, and they'll give him a lesser sentence if he informs on others. So they're going to take his they're going to believe his testimony informing somebody else, but he himself is a criminal. I mean, the whole thing is.
So you're saying that I'm looking for something that doesn't exist. There's no parallel in Western law to Russia, to Psul Russia. But again, I still think that there are cases. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think there are cases in which they really check out the credentials of the witness to see if he's got a good record or not. I'll give you another example. What would be, according to Rava, in the case of a man who lives a very loose kind of life in the area of relationship with women? You know, he's not what you call the most moral, ethical person. You know, he's willing to, even at the expense of ruining someone's marriage, you know, to fulfill his pleasures, his desires. Would such a person, according to Rava, be posel yedus? And once again, I'm tempted to think that money, you know, if he's testifying and he doesn't get any monetary benefits, or even if he does get monetary benefits, but those monetary benefits are not going to in any way help him achieve his desires, his hedonistic pleasures, because his hedonistic pleasures have nothing to do with money, maybe we could trust him in a court of law. He's not an aid chamas. Again, according to Rav, the only Russia who's possible is a Rasha de Chamas, which means that he has some monetary benefit. A Tosis, for example, back on Daf Chav Dalet, wants to say that a person who violates Lo Sachmod might be possibly as a Rasha de Chamas. He is in such love for this money that he'll force someone to part with his money in order that he could get that possession. But if the Avera, which generates Rasha, has nothing to do with money, if you could separate that, again, it's a little bit difficult to find such areas that have no relationship to money, but it's just pure taiva. Or alternatively, Rav, in the case of lahachis, which what motivates him again is not money, it's just lahachis. Offer him two restaurants, they both charge the same, he'll go to the trefer restaurant just to prove you up. I remember my father used to tell me that in Brooklyn, New York, there were Jews, and not one or two, who after Yom Kippur, davening, what we call Kol Nidre, they would go eat out in Wolfie's restaurant, one of the most famous trefer restaurants in Brooklyn, New York. And you and I might be shocked by that, but my father said it was not shocking. I mean, again, he was very upset about it. You know, obviously, as the rabbi of the community, he was very upset. But I'm just saying, you have all sorts of criminals. You know, I don't mean criminals in Jewish law. Meisvei, the Gemara now quotes a brisa which seems to contradict Rava. What does the brisa say? It says that how do we interpret this pasuk al toshes rasha eid al toshes chamas eid? As if to say there are two parts of this verse, and the brisa is going to say that, you know what it means? It means don't accept a gazlan, a thief, as a witness. And who is included in this? Elu gazlanim. Okay, that I understand. And gazlanim would be posel sai according to Abai and sai according to Rava, because this is certainly the classic case of a Rosh of the Chamas. But then it adds ma'alim b'shvuos. These are people who will take an oath, and they couldn't care less about perjuring themselves on their oath. My love, the Gemara thinks right now that it doesn't matter what kind of shvuah we're talking about. There are many, many categories of shvuah. Echad shvuah shav, echad shvuah mama. So shvuah shav is a wasted shvuah. When a person says something that's obviously incorrect, and he falsifies the truth in the most obvious way, he looks at a piece of like a pillar made of stone, and he says, "Well, that's gold," and he, you know, that's, nobody would take that seriously. It's made of stone and not of gold. And he took an oath, and he took a shvuah. Such a person is called a moel b'shvuos. He violates the law of lotisa shem Hashem elokech lashov. And shvuas mamon, okay, shvuas mamon, I understand. You know, he was under oath in a case where somebody was suing him for money, and he had to take a shvuah to defend himself, or the reverse.
I'm so sorry, did you just start?
We're going to start in about, I'm finishing up now, we're going to start in about 9 minutes or so.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
sorry to disturb you.
Yeah. So that now, what's the case? I'll give you an alternative case. Let's say he is suing someone else for damages, and he, as the tovea, as the plaintiff, he has to take a shvua. That's called a nishba v'notel. In any event, he has to take a shvua for a monetary case in which he'll gain something monetarily, and we found him, established him to be someone who's flippant about shvua, and he violates his shvua. Now we have a kash on Rava, because we also have included in this brisa the case of shvua shav. Shvua shav is a religious violation, but it's not a rush of the chamas. He doesn't gain any money by saying, oh, I swear to you that this is gold, when everybody knows it's not gold. So Gemara rejects this and says, no, the brisa was not intending to refer to someone who violates a shvua shav, but idi v'idi, both of these categories are shvuas mamon. Now, it says shvuos, molim v'shvuos in the plural. So it must be referring to two different categories. So what are these two different categories? Umay shvuos. And the answer is shvuos the alma. In other words, he's talking about bnei adam, you know, people who take oaths. So he uses the plural because he's referring to people. He's not referring to any specific individual. But if you ask me, this individual, is he posel yedus or not? The answer is, he perjured himself in a shvuas mama. But if he perjured himself in a shvuas shav, in which he took an oath, as we said before, that this wooden pole is made of gold, then he's not posel yedus. Why? Because according to Rava, what kind of rush is posel yedus? Only a rush of the chamas. Can we remember that? Only a rusha who violates the Torah for the sake of money. So if he takes a shvuas mamon, and we find him to have lied under oath, his shvua is worthless, and his testimony is worthless, because for the sake of money, he's willing to violate the Torah. However, in a case of shvuas shav, he's not going to perjure himself in a court of law. We don't believe he's an eight sheker. And the reason for that is because he is in violation of a shvua, but not a shvua in mamon. Now, the Brisa again mentions Al-Toshes Chamos Eid. And what we're saying is that the Brisa mentioned Al-Toshes Rosha Eid, Al-Toshes Chamos Eid. The Gemara and the Havmina thought these were two categories, and therefore, when the Gemara talks about Mol, when the Brisa talks about Mol and Bishvuos in the plural, it's referring to both these categories. One category, Shvua Shav, he would come under Al-Toshes Rosha Eid, and that would support Abaye. And the other category, in the case of Shvuas Mamon, he would be Posel Yedus under the category of Toshes Chamas Eid. Because for the sake of money, he will violate a Shvua. Such a person cannot be trusted in a Bezdin, and he's Posel Yedus. And that's going to be Abai's interpretation of the Brisa. When it comes to Rava, Rava is interpreting the Brisa in a totally different way. Rava believes that this Brisa is talking about only one category, even though it uses the plural, and the word Shvuos means Shvuos the Alma, and we're talking about Shvuos Mama. If he's violating a Shvuos Mama, then he comes under the category of Rasha de Chamas. And Abai, and even though Abai expands Russia as a psul to Russia, lav the chamas, and that's why Rava says that ochel nevelus le hachis is possibly this Rava whittles down the psul of Russia to the case of Russia the chamas, and in the case where he is possible because he's a moel b'shvuos, we're talking about shvuas mama. And only when he violates an aver because of mammon, in that area of monetary gain, then is he disqualified henceforth for testimony. So at this point, we're going to take a break. We'll stop here at Meisve. Does anybody happen to have a pencil? If not, I'll just try to remember where we got up to. Oh, thank you so much, Meisve. And Belinetta will pick this up tomorrow. So wish everyone a great day. Thank you so much.